It is hour number two of the Frank Beckman Show. We'll get to more of your calls coming up in just a little bit, 800-859-0957. Nolan Finley's going to be on with us a little later on this hour, the editorial page columnist at the Detroit News, who is going to be speaking to the Bloomfield Republican Women's Club luncheon. That's a big deal, and he'll have a good time talking about the debate as well. Meantime, there is an event up in Midland at Northwood University. It's been going on all week to celebrate Freedom Week, second year they've been doing it up there. And they're talking about all sorts of issues with economists and entrepreneurs, legal scholars, government officials, political activists, you name it. They've had a little bit of everybody. We had Dinesh D'Souza on earlier this week to tell you about it. And the free event will end, sadly, tomorrow. One of the keynote speakers tomorrow is on the other end of our line. He is with Crime Prevention Research Center, John Lott, Jr., and he's back on the air with us here on the Frank Beckman Show. John, how are you?
Doing great. Great to talk to you again, Frank.
And you're actually not coming into Midland. I understand you're doing the presentation by Skype, so you're using all of this 21st century technology to do it.
Right. Well, apparently the audience, same time the audience can see me, I'll be able to see them.
So. How cool. I mean, but to think about that, how far we've come, that, you know, now we can have guest speakers come in via the Internet, you know?
Right. Who knows what I'm wearing below the waist, as long as...
Oh, don't even talk like that. Come on, you're speaking about law and order and crime prevention, and you want to talk you want to talk about going commando on everybody.
No, I wasn't going to be saying that. I was more thinking like short pants or something as opposed to wearing a coat and tie above that.
All right, well, that's fair enough then. I thought you were going further. So, you know, it's interesting. Last night in the debate, I didn't hear, unless I completely missed it, any conversation about race relations, what's happened to race relations in our country, what's happened with the police community in our country, with the 85 cops that have been murdered this year or killed in the line of duty. I heard none of that last night in the debate, which surprised me a little bit.
I guess there was a little bit of that in the first debate, but, you know... With a three-hour debate there, you would think that they might have a little bit of time to get into that. Surely police around the country feel besieged right now, and understandably so. And it'd be nice if the White House would come to their defense a little bit, but I guess eventually, sooner or later, that's going to have to be an issue that people are going to have to deal with. Possibly they just thought they'd get a fairly uniform reaction from the candidates last night, so they wanted to focus on issues where they thought there'd be more divergence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish somebody would have asked Ben Carson, for instance, about Black Lives Matter, you know?
Right. Well, and he's spoken out strongly on that in the past. And I think he probably would have shined more if he had been given that type of question, but... look, I don't know how, look, there's been a lot of inflammatory language that's been put out there about police and blacks. You've had claims that have been all over the Sunday morning talk shows that supposedly young black males and their teens are killed at 20 times the rate of young whites who are the same age. You know, it's completely false claims that are put out there. You know, that one claim, they don't make it clear that they're only looking at about 1.2% of all the police departments in the country. And the problem is that 1.2% that the data is based on tend to be police departments from extremely heavily black areas. I mean, it'd be like going to Harlem in New York, seeing the rate that blacks were killed by police there, and then assuming that's the rate for the rest of the United States. If you only have primarily blacks living in an area, you know, then you expect to have relatively more people like that killed in that area. You want to have something that's more representative of the population mix in the entire country if you're going to assume that's the rate in the whole country. But, I mean, those are the types of things that I'm have to believe that the people who put the data together know the problems with it, but yet they put it out there, and it's the type of inflammatory thing that I think ends up getting people killed.
So, John, what's your message via Skype tomorrow for Northwood's audience?
Well, I'm going to go through a bunch of kind of problems or conundrums that are out there dealing with law and economics, to show them that, you know, I'll give you one simple example, and that is I would argue that the professional licensing rules that we have in this country actually lower the quality of people who go into professions in many cases. One of the common features that you see in professional licensing is a time restriction. So if you want to become a barber, you may have to take classes for at least 6 months and have to have like a 95% attendance rate. You see similar things if you want to become a real estate agent or even a doctor or a lawyer. And the issue is that there may be some people that already know how to do those services, but if you make them have to spend at least 6 months, they may not, the brightest people who are giving up the most in terms of earning money in other occupations will be less likely to go through it. So, for example, you probably, with a weekend's worth of studying, could become a real estate agent if that's really what you wanted to do. You probably could figure out present value calculations, which is about half the test, and you could pick up a book and look at it to figure out real estate law. But you're not going to go and spend 6 months, five nights a week, 3 hours a night, and have to have a 95% attendance rate to go and learn stuff that you already know. And the problem is that the people who are most likely not to meet that requirement are, in fact, the brightest people. And so you have questions about why they would set up licensing rules that actually discourage bright people from going into professions.
John Lott Jr. is with us. He's president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, but he's been involved in free market activities, free market think tanks for, well, pretty much since he left the womb. And he's going to be speaking via Skype at Northwood University tomorrow as part of their Freedom Week. He's been talking to us about issues that he'll be discussing, and especially jobs and how they're restricted by what government likes to do in forcing us to be licensed for various things. And you're absolutely right. You mentioned real estate. That's just one of the areas where you're forced to take classes and then take a state test. The same is true for even things like beauticians.
Right. You know, and basically almost all professions require a time component that you have to do for the test. So you can't get through law school unless you take 2.5 years of classes. You can't get through medical school unless you spend 3.5 years. The school will lose their accreditation if they let students through faster than that. But, you know, there's students, you go look at undergraduates, there's some undergraduates who graduate in 2 years rather than take 4, even though some may take more than that. And the question is, if you made it so that some people could get through faster, you know, maybe 1.5 years of school for law or something, you would imagine that some really bright students who otherwise were discouraged might go into law. And so why don't they do that? Well, I think the reason why you have those time restrictions, I mean, if you just wanted to limit the number of people who go into the profession, you could simply reduce the pass rate on the test, make the test harder, make people have to get higher scores. Most economists would say the reason why you have this licensing is just to restrict the number of people who go into the profession so as to raise the wages for the people that are already there. But they don't just do that, because if they did that, then you'd only get the really brightest people going into the profession if you make the test harder. And I think what happens is that they want to restrict the people who are going in, but also still allow a number of people going in. You don't want to make it too small. You want to have people who support the licensing. And the thing is, if the new people come in aren't as bright as the older people who are already in the profession, they're not as much of a threat. They're not as much of a substitute towards those guys. And you can let in relatively more people than you otherwise would have been able to let in and still not reduce the salaries for the people who are already in the profession.
Mm-hmm. And you could cut down on the bureaucracy and, who knows, maybe encourage more people to enter some of these professions if you had less restrictions imposed by governments. John,
right.
Appreciate it. Have a nice, safe trip in, but
right.
You don't have far to go, probably just to your den to set up the
right.
Skype speech. So
telecommuting.
Exactly right. Telecommuting, and that's the way to go. Dress Natalie for the occasion, okay?
I will.
I'll talk
all
to
right.
you later.
Take
Thanks
care.
For
Thanks.
The time.